From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. On this special Women's History Month edition of the program, our four special guests are the co-hosts of VOA's Our Voices program, Ayen Bior of VOA's South Sudan in Focus project, Hadiza Kiari of VOA's House of Service, who's not here with us today but is also a co-host, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick of VOA's English to Africa service, and Orion Itangishaka from VOA's Central Africa service. Our Voices, VOA's newest roundtable discussion show, focuses on African women's points of view. It's the first time VOA has produced content that is exclusively driven by female journalists on serious topics affecting the continent, from climate change to politics, health, education, social issues, entrepreneurship, security, and conflict resolution, just to name a few. The 30-minute television talk show engages African women and girls from across the continent on these and other pressing issues of the day. The discussion continues online with a robust social media presence. The anchors come from different geographic and linguistic regions of Africa. Ayen Bior, as we said, is from South Sudan, Hadiza Kiari from Nigeria, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick from South Africa, and Orion Itangishaka is from Burundi, giving a pan-African outlook to the panel on issues that affect African women. We'll be talking with our three panelists on this edition of Press Conference USA about their show, Our Voices, its genesis, topics, and impact. And as we commemorate Women's History Month, we'll ask each of them to assess what progress has been achieved and what challenges remain for our African sisters. Three co-hosts of Our Voices join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Carol.
It's a real honor.
Likewise. Well, let me begin with you, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick. What prompted you all to start this program? Talk a bit about the format, how you come up with topics, and your target audience.
What drew me to this idea of doing a program that features women talking about issues that Africans would like to hear about is I was very interested in really talking about not just how the world views Africa and African women, but how Africans and African women see themselves as part of the global community. And this is an opportunity for us to highlight the accomplishments of African women who have always been the backbone of African economies and are making great contributions to economies around the world. And that was probably the biggest draw card for me. And that's also the lens through which we look at subjects when we choose stories, subject matter. We always hear about the dangers of the single narrative when we talk about Africa. There are so many stories that have yet to be told. Africa is such a diverse place that even we are surprised sometimes when we talk amongst each other how we're all part of the same continent, but how very different our countries are. And so that lens is we want to showcase Africa's diversity, and we want to showcase the contributions that Africans are making on the continent and around the world.
Those are all excellent points. Ayen Bior, what do you have to add or subtract to that? And I'd also like to know about your audience, how the female audience has been responding.
Before I talk about what drew me to this show specifically, I just want to say what drew me to journalism. When I was studying journalism, I realized that when it comes to our countries in Africa, the people telling the stories don't always reflect us on the panel. It's normally dominated by men. And I realized very early on that a lot of stories were being missed because there weren't a lot of female journalists on the ground talking to people. And I think we all know from experience that women who live these stories speak to female reporters in a different manner. So that's what drew me to journalism. When this show came around, I saw an opportunity to really amplify the voices of millions of women across Africa. And I saw a chance for us to talk about issues like skin bleaching, like China and Africa, told by women from the continent. I'm glad that, you know, we're in a position where we get to do this, but at the same time, it's a bit surprising that this is the first show of its kind at VOA, and I hope that more shows like it will come as well.
Terrific. Now let me turn to Orion Itangishaka for your take on the program, topics, and what drew you.
Yes, and just as Ayen said, the people who are telling the stories usually don't reflect the demographic. So it was for me an honor to be able to not just come on this show and give a woman's perspective on different women's issue, but just being a woman and giving a woman's perspective was very important for me. We have a lot of topics we cover, as they've said, but it's really important for me to be able to to just be on the panel of women that not always talking about women's issue, but also the part of the show that I really appreciate is highlighting the wonderful things that women on the continent are doing. The segment is called Women to Watch, and a lot of time there's a lot of women on a grassroots level that are doing great things but never get the coverage, and so we get to cover their stories, their accomplishments on the show.
Well, that leads me to ask you all, Haiti, Adams Fitzpatrick, to talk about some of these women that you're showcasing.
There are several, and they're across ages. And obviously, most of the time, we tend to be more connected to women from our various regions. But that doesn't always matter. Sometimes I might find a woman in Nigeria who's, I think, is amazing to watch. Obviously, this would be someone who is up and coming, who hasn't had the exposure, and someone whose future is worth watching. So, of course, this person would still have to be alive, although there are many women who've done amazing things and been trailblazers. In South Africa, a story for one girl I featured was the girl who challenged her school's racist hair policy. She went to a private school in South Africa and was told she could not wear her hair in a natural slash African way. She had to assimilate with everybody else. And she protested, and it had a sort of domino effect around the country. She refused that. And the school changed the hair policy that allowed black and mixed race girls to wear their hair in the way that they feel is natural and that connects with their culture. Though she's young and she's already been such a trailblazer at such a young age, and those are the types of women whose future we want to watch. Another woman we featured was Pastor Terry Gabunga from Kenya, who was a survivor of rape. Her story was probably one of those ones that just ripped my heart out, because she didn't show up for her wedding day a few years ago because she had been abducted and was raped. For 6 hours she was tortured and thrown out of a moving car. She eventually did get to marry the man that she had planned to marry. But then a few months later, he died. And so her story was how she picked herself up from that and became this hero. Today, she shares her story with others. She has beautiful children. She is married again. So we're looking at these stories of women who have overcome so much, stories of survival, and women who have gone on to become heroes in their communities.
And Ayan Bior from South Sudan, anything to add or subtract in terms of these women?
Well, I do want to add that although we do look at women at the grassroots level, we also look at pioneers in several industries. We just did a show where we talked about Alekwek, the model from South Sudan, who really disrupted the modeling industry, and how her work in the modeling industry allowed dark-skinned women to appear on TV, to appear on the cover of magazines, and it started a conversation about colorism. So women like that. But I do want to point to Haiti's point again, because although we do look at women who are unsung heroes that we normally wouldn't see on the movie screens, it's also, for me, it's important to look at women who were pioneers in their own way and have really created a space for us to talk about these things and given us confidence to appear on TV or to be heard on the radio and to do so with confidence, as I just said.
Orion Itangishaka, you're doing a program on conflict resolution on the 25th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide, and that brings to mind women who are involved in conflict resolution. And we know, of course, Nobel laureate and former president of Liberia, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, is a true heroine in that regard. Talk about your take on women who need to be showcased, those that we know well and those that we don't.
Yeah, I think when we talk about politics on the continent, one of the things that we realize and we like to highlight a lot is women are being at the negotiation tables. A lot of times we look at the issues exactly where things didn't go well, whether it be in conflict, whether it be in just situation of unrest, and where women can contribute. So as you've said, in Liberia, women actually were a great example of how their peace movement brought about negotiation and to end the civil war in 2003, and that birthed the first ever African woman president on the continent. I think that, as we've said in the show on the Rwandan genocide, when we were discussing the commemoration of 25th anniversary, we highlighted how women played a role in bringing about healing in the communities, and also, of course, the fact that Rwanda has one of the highest number of women parliament, and that women, when they come together after conflicts, when the status quo is shaken because of unrest, they have an opportunity to enter into leadership roles. That's a great thing to be able to look at, to highlight, and to follow closely on the continent, so that women also get the credit for bringing about peace in places where there's always unrest.
Yes, go ahead, Haiti.
I think the biggest lesson for me doing the show and exploring all these topics, especially when it comes to women, is about more often than not, all the solutions to Africa's problems lie within Africa. And women have been the silent heroes and at the forefront without getting the credit or recognition that they deserve for this. But you can go to any village anywhere in Africa and ask a mama, what is going on here and what should be done? And she will explain to you what the pain in her society is, but she will also be able to tell you what needs to be done. And that is why these grassroots women have this highly developed sense of justice, and they need support to help bring effective, meaningful change, because often the answer is not in the higher echelons of government, but right at the very grassroots level.
Yeah, and for the show that Ariane is talking about, I was actually surprised to learn that peace agreements are 64% less likely to fail if women aren't involved, and they're 35% more likely to hold for at least 15 years if women are involved. At the same time, I also learned that only one woman has ever signed a peace agreement as the chief negotiator. So it seems like we have these two dichotomies where it's clear that women need to be at the negotiation table, and yet, for some reason, they're not.
Well, that's a very good point, and it leads us to wonder, you know, if there's something intrinsic in women that lend themselves to forging peace, and why, whether in Africa or any part of the world, we're not involving more women at the negotiating table.
And that's right, and that's why it's very critical to have shows like Our Voices, because it deals with precisely that. Why aren't we seeing more women at the negotiation table? Why aren't we seeing more women in parliament? Why aren't we seeing women in executive branches of government? So we are hoping to correct that by inspiring young women, young girls, women to actually get their voices heard in many ways.
And also women, you know, are more often than not at the receiving end of so many injustices we see in societies across the globe. They don't start wars, they don't start conflicts, and they don't contribute to keeping them going, yet they bear the brunt of all the damage and destruction that we see around us. I think it would just be a very obvious place to start. It's sad that we have to do a show to point those things out, because you'd think it'd be very obvious. Bring women in to the conversation and you'll reap the benefits.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guests are three of the four co-hosts of VOA's Our Voices television program, Ayen Bior of South Sudan, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick from South Africa, and Ariane Itangishaka from Burundi. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a shout out to all our female listeners, wherever you are in the world. We want to hear from you. If you want to hear your name on the air and your home country, please send us feedback to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And now I'd like Ariane Itangishaka to tell our listeners how they can access your show online.
Of course, yes, thank you. They can go on our website at voanews.com, where they can search for VOA Our Voices. All the episodes are there. They can also find us on YouTube. The channel is called TV2, the number 2, Africa. And on Facebook, of course, we are there. Our handle on Facebook is at VOA Our Voices. And of course, we are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. Our handle is also at VOA Our Voices.
Wonderful. Well, back to our program. And let me start again with Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick. As we commemorate Women's History Month, I'd like you all to reflect on the biggest challenges women face in Africa, where progress has been made and where there are shortcomings, which we spoke about just before the break, in terms of not giving women enough credit for all that they're doing. They're the backbone of the continent, whether in agriculture and so many other areas. What are the factors, do you think, that are impeding a greater progress?
I think, and this is what I have lived and seen in South Africa, there is a culture of exclusion. It is so easy for us to exclude one another when we don't like the way they look, what they're saying, what they bring to the table. There really is a culture of exclusion when it comes to women, especially. They're excluded from the economy, when it comes to access to financing, when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to jobs, and especially in places where all these resources are scarce. Women tend to everybody else and then to themselves last. They're the last ones to go to bed. They're the first ones to wake up in the morning. And while there is a culture of exclusion, I think sometimes women also walk around with this idea that they should eat last and they should last person to go to bed. So those are issues that we need to start getting rid of.
That's a very good point. Women have been conditioned and are part of the problem sometimes. Right. So, Ayan Bior, what would you say are some of the factors? We talked about culture of exclusion. To what extent are laws perhaps part of it, this sort of inbred chauvinism, which we see in so many cultures, not just in the continent of Africa?
And I was just going to say, we need to include men in our conversations because we can make all the progress that we can, but if men are not involved, if men don't see that we are equal to them, then we really won't get anywhere. And that's what I really like about our voices is, although we are four women talking about these issues, we invite the men to the table because we recognize that unless they are at the table, unless they listen to us, and unless we also listen to them, we won't make any progress.
Just a quick addition to that. What we've also come to realize on our show is that how do you get men to tune in and to engage on a show where there are four women talking about issues? I think you speak to them through their daughters, and you speak to them in a way that makes them understand this is in the interest not just of themselves, but of their mothers, their sisters, their daughters, because every man in Africa has a mother or a daughter or a woman that they care about. And if you speak to them in that way, they might engage in a much more sustainable way.
And Orion, talk about your sense of factors that are contributing to women's empowerment or lack thereof.
I think in Africa, just as in many places in the world, we see that culture and religion could be roadblocks to a woman's empowerment, woman's progress. A lot of times you have to tackle that roadblock when you're trying to empower women because of how they've been programmed through culture and religion. It's hard for them to pick themselves up and to do anything other than following what they've been told and what they've been doing. But I've been seeing, you know, some positivity in women empowerment in Africa and many different places. We see a little bit of political will when it comes to quotas and including women in government. Even though it might seem forced, but I think it's a stepping stone to allowing, quote unquote, women to take part in decision-making process of different things in the country. So I think that we are getting there. We have different places on the continent where the number of women in parliament exceed the numbers of women in parliament in the Western world. And it's very impressive that on the continent you will find the highest numbers of women in government. So it's encouraging to know that we're making room and men are understanding that women have value. I think we're getting there slowly but surely.
Indeed. Again, there are some countries, particularly Rwanda, where they have a minimum percentage of seats in parliament for women.
That's 30%.
Right, but they still exceed that.
That's right.
So that's a great sign. So Haiti, I'd like to know, what about feedback from men, male viewers? Could you talk about that? Because you need them to be part of the conversation.
Our audience tends to be more male. And this is the challenge for us, too, because we'd like to get more women into the fold. But at the same time, we're also very encouraged by the fact that there are men actually engaging with the show, which is great. We just wish that there'd be a greater balance in that. But I'll tell you a little story. I was in Johannesburg late last year, and one of our affiliate station managers, he was standing right in front of me watching the show, and he said, you know, I like this show. I like the four of you. I hope you continue to talk about very relevant issues, because my 19-year-old daughter would watch the show, and I would want my 19-year-old daughter to watch the show, because I want you four to be role models for her. This was a father saying that, and that just reinforced that men do have a connection to the show through the women in their lives, but that they also see that women are a natural part of the important conversations that we have. In Africa, sometimes we congratulate men too much when they do the right thing. We were talking on our show yesterday about Rwanda's parliament. More than 62% of the parliament consists of women. And the president's been getting a lot of praise for that. I just think that's the way the world should be, because that reflects the demographics of a country where women make up more than half of the population. And so we shouldn't celebrate too much when we get just a little bit more. And we should expect that to be the bare minimum in parliaments across the continent. Men need to also know their role, not just being part of the conversation, but it is their responsibility to help pave the way for women. Men have been largely responsible for blocking women's access to many things. And I think there is a responsibility, our men across the continent, to help undo those roadblocks. And many have shown that they are very happy to do it. In South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa. In Ethiopia, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. In Namibia, we see that happening. I'm hoping that the presidents who aren't doing it should start feeling uncomfortable and that they're behind the times and that these are going to be the new very progressive leaders that are going to help take women forward.
Indeed. Ian Bior, I want to also turn now to issues that you've been discussing on the program, and they aren't just what we call women's issues, whether it's health or education, which are critical, obviously, but the impact of China in Africa, corruption, national security, the threat of terrorism. Women bear the brunt of these topics. What are some topics that you think are critical and that you've been discussing or plan to discuss?
We just taped a show on skin bleaching and colorism, and we found out that, first of all, skin bleaching is a multi-billion dollar industry. In places like Nigeria, up to 77% of the population there uses some form of skin bleaching. I have dealt with colorism my entire life because I'm from South Sudan, so we are one of the darkest people in the world. But at the same time, I'm one of the lightest people in my family. So I have these two realities where when I'm with my family, I'm considered light skin. And when I step out into the world, I'm considered dark skin. So I've had to learn to navigate the world with these two narratives in my mind. That show, I think, was particularly important because it made us ask some really tough questions. Why is fair skin considered more beautiful? We spoke to an actress in Nigeria who said that she uses skin bleaching because lighter-skinned actresses get jobs, and we wanted to know why that is. For me, that, I think, is a really critical conversation to have because it affects so many people, but at the same time, it seems like it's an issue that people are just treating like it's normal to bleach your skin when, in fact, there are serious health risks. There's people who have gotten skin cancer because of skin bleaching creams. There's kidney failure that you have to worry about, and yet people still continue to use these very harmful products. And so we had a show to try and figure out why that is.
Fascinating. It also plays into some kind of a stereotype that somehow lighter skin is superior, which is very troubling to hear.
And it's troubling that this is a conversation we're having with each other. It's not just Africa versus the West, where you find probably more fair-skinned people, but these are the uncomfortable conversations we're having in our own communities about how we treat each other mm-hmm. based on skin color, and that's on us.
And there are so many other fascinating topics that I encourage our audience to look at the website and view some of the programs.
And if I can just add another very interesting topic that I think we've had was China in Africa. Ian mentioned it. I really enjoyed that topic because it's happening right now. China is just really coming in aggressively on the continent, and many Africans are asking, is this another form of colonialism, debt traps? And so we as women are bringing our perspective on that topic. We dissected that topic. We looked at why and how and what our leaders doing, how careful are they being in taking some of these loans. And so this is one example that shows that we are not just women talking about women's issue, but we are very concerned about the political situation, the economic situation on the continent, and this is what we have to say.
Not just at the macro level, but what about the micro level? Women are in commerce, they're in the marketplace, and I have seen myself so many Chinese are in the area of petty commerce, disrupting
You have an example of
indigenous.
Where, exactly right. If a woman trying to design maybe a kente cloth, but it's taken to China, is duplicated, and it comes back and it costs twice the price. And so that's one of the things that as women, we face those kind of repercussion or consequences of having a country like China coming in.
Indeed. And in other topics, women are the first line. We talk about whether it's the so-called Islamic State or Boko Haram. What about the girls that were kidnapped? Women are always either victims or deeply affected by these larger issues and challenges. Energy, powering up Africa, Haiti, any more topics you want to amplify?
Well, this is actually something that we're going to be working on in coming episodes, really, is something that I personally, as a reporter, wanted to really explore, and I started working on this. It's about xenophobia in South Africa. Africa is a place of many, many tensions, and I think perhaps the saddest thing that I've seen in my lifetime is the way South Africans treat other Africans. I'm generalizing here, but of course, South Africa has a huge problem with xenophobia, even to the point where there are South Africans who have called out and said, we should build a wall and keep other Africans out. Not so long ago, South Africa needed refuge from places like Tanzania and Zimbabwe, and those were countries that took South African exiles in. And today, there are movements in the country to keep other Africans out. It's been fascinating for me hearing the stories of how other Africans are coming to South Africa, who they see as the Europe of Africa. But many say they arrive in South Africa only to realize that in the Europe of Africa, Black people are at the lowest point in the economy, and all they are is just another poor Black person. That plus their lives are in danger because resources are scarce and people are taking out their frustrations with their politics on people who they can easily point to and say, you're foreign. So the word for a foreigner in South Africa, especially if you're a foreigner from another African country, is Makwerekwere. You can ask any Cameroonian who's been to South Africa or any Zimbabwean who's been there, any Kenyan, they would be referred to as Makwerekwere. Not too long ago, that was the same kind of word used against South Africans under apartheid, called Swart Gevaar, which is Afrikaans for the Black Danger. And today, that is how we look at other Africans. So there are these tensions and issues that really need to be discussed, because this one's on us.
Right. Well, that's a very interesting point. And of course, as you know, here in this country, we're going through a period of xenophobia. It's not alien to our history, but it's contrary to our basic values.
A lot of people are drawing from that. They're seeing what's happening and like, oh, maybe we should try this, yeah.
Build a wall. Where did that concept come from?
That's what people are saying. Maybe we should build a wall.
This is disconcerting, one could say, because you have definitely a lot of migration in the continent. We have these civil conflicts, movement of people based on these conflicts, of course, South Sudan and elsewhere. So very serious problems.
And what's happening in Mozambique right now, my greatest fear is as people are leaving Mozambique because they're looking for a better life elsewhere, the only place where most people probably be flocking to is the wealthiest city in Africa, which is Johannesburg, and also happens to be one of the most xenophobic places in Africa, where the mayor has said all foreigners must get out. So people are going from one dangerous situation to another. These are the kinds of issues that we're going to be exploring in coming episodes.
Excellent. That sounds really promising. I want to ask you one thing before we close. I know you had a program on the rites of passage, and I'd like to know, particularly if you discussed female genital mutilation, which is unfortunately a problem we have in Africa in some countries. Ayan, can you speak to that?
We did speak about FGM, and FGM is a really frustrating topic for me because it's typically women who do these procedures on younger girls. And this is one of those issues where it's clearly a cultural issue, and unless, one, it's not seen as an issue. So that's first and foremost. There's people who practice it who say that it's their way of life, and they defend it in that matter. But we spoke to people, we had people on the show, some who have undergone FGM and said that this has hurt them in indescribable ways. And all that I can do in my position is to listen to the victims of FGM and to make sure that their stories are heard. But I think it's also important to speak to people who are in charge of putting young girls through these issues to figure out why they continue to participate in FGM, knowing the kind of damage that it does to young girls.
And I think that in that particular show, what Ayan is saying, to talk to specifically people, hopefully in the communities who understand how harmful that could be, we had actually a man in the community in Kenya who stood up and is actually has a campaign of ending it, because it frustrated him to be in school and not see his classmates because he knew what had happened to them. So when you have men as allies in this kind of fight, I think you can see great results. So as Heidi was saying earlier, you need allies, you need men ally in issues like FGM.
And in particular for FGM, because from what I've heard from women who participate in the practice, they do it because they want their young girls to be marriageable. So it's really important that we include men in the conversation, particularly for FGM.
There's also a clash of cultures here in that many people who now perhaps live in the West and have gone through it either in the West or on the continent. And I just did a story about this recently, a woman who had undergone it and she's still suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. She's had to have vaginal reconstructive surgery. But on the other hand, I spoke to someone else who had said that she had undergone FGM and she did not feel violated by it. In fact, this is a very integral part of her culture. And she is of the mind that anti-FGM advocates should stay out of Africa's business because it puts pressure on governments to outlaw the practice, and that puts pressure on communities to want to have their children circumcised before it is banned. And all that does is it either drives the practice underground or it forces people to go and take their children to be circumcised as babies or as five-year-olds.
But I do think it's important to note that the woman who underwent FGM and was in favor of it chose to do it and did it when she was an adult.
It's about choice.
All right. Well, whether it's FGM, female circumcision, or other larger issues, whether politics, education, energy, China in Africa. You can hear it on our voices. Ladies, I can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing your wonderful insights.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Patrice Martin for booking our guests. Our engineer was Thomas Blondet. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.